in the spiritual experience, it talks about there's one thing that can keep us from experiencing what AA has to offer, this spiritual solution. And that's what they call contempt prior to investigation. And what that means to me is don't knock it before you try it. Come in, give it a good shot. Come in, take a deep seat and really give it a wholehearted, earnest effort. You can always go back to doing what you were doing before. You can always go back to drinking and using drugs, but maybe, just maybe, you won't have to. And maybe you won't want to. Maybe you'll discover something that you didn't think was possible. That's exactly what's happened to me.
Well, hello, friends of Bill W. and other friends. You have landed on Sober Speak. My name is John M. I am an alcoholic, and we are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. Newcomers, that is, both to recovery as a whole and newcomers to this podcast. Sober Speak is a podcast about recovery centered around the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My job here on Sober Speak is simple. My job is to provide a platform to the amazing stories of recovery all around us. Consider Sober Speak, if you will, your meeting between meetings. Please remember, we do not speak for AA or any 12-step community. We represent only ourselves. We are here to share our experience, strength, and hope with those who wish to come along for the ride. Take what you want and leave the rest at the curb for the trash man to pick up. Greetings from Studio AA, deep in the heart of Texas. That was the voice of Mr. Chris F. that you heard at the beginning of this here episode, and you're going to be Little Ginge. Who, you may ask, is Little Ginge? Well, you'd have to go back and listen to last week's episode. I'm not going to go through that entire thing again, but my daughter kind of named me Little Ginge. She said that'd be a good rapper name for me. But anyway, first things first, before we get to Chris, this here episode is made possible by Brad. What, you may ask, did Brad do to deserve such a mention? Well, he went to our website, www.soberspeak.com, clicked on that little yellow donate tab at the bottom of the page, actually, and made a contribution. So thank you so much, Brad, for your generosity. This here episode is coming right out to you-ins. If you are new to the pod, you've landed on Sober Speak. We are here to help get you on the beam if indeed you are feeling restless, irritable, and discontent, and we're so glad that you have joined us. If you're not following us on Instagram, that would be at Sober Speak, all one word. And if you want to join the super secret Facebook group, you can go to your Facebook application, look up Sober Speak Secret Group and ask for admission. I didn't realize there's so many, anyway, words like that in what I say. But anyway, you can ask for admission into the group and we will get you on in there. What do I want to tell you? You know, okay, I was thinking this right before I hit record here. And there were a couple of different songs that I listened to on the radio this week that really got me in a grateful mood. The first one was Beautiful Day by U2. Oh man, it just had me verklempt. It actually kind of had me overwhelmed with emotion thinking about It's a Beautiful Day. And then the other one was, and I'm not even a fan of this guy, but he wrote that song called Happy If You're Happy and You Know It. You know that guy, Pharrell or something like that. But anyway, that song actually got me going as well. And so here's the deal. I have a podcast, so I could just talk about those things. As I like to say, it's my podcast, and I'll do what I want to. But anyway, The other thing that I was thinking about is I was just in a meeting yesterday, and the subject of the third tradition came up. And for those of you who do not know that off the top of your head, the third tradition says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There's a lot of history that goes behind that, and I'm not going to go into all of it, but I will tell you I know the very first contact that I ever had with Alcoholics Anonymous via a phone call, the one where you have to lift up the handle and dial the numbers and all that sort of stuff, was I called the Dallas AA Intergroup. Somehow I knew the name Alcoholics Anonymous. I found it in the phone book. And there was a gentleman there who talked to me on the phone. And I was loaded and, knew that I needed help, didn't know where to turn for help. And I knew this was not the kind of life that I wanted to be living at the time. And we had a long conversation, but the only thing that I remember out of that conversation that he said to me as the years went on, because it was a couple more years, I think, before I actually got sober. So, I was in and out of the program, in and out. The only thing that I remembered him saying was, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I thought, I have that. I have a desire to stop drinking. Now, I'm glad that that gentleman did not say the only requirement for membership is that you do a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself, and then you go out and make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. That would not have been cool. I don't think I would have come. But maybe I'll meet that person and that voice someday in the big meeting in the sky or whatever. I have no idea who it was, but if you're out there and you're somehow listening to this somehow, thank you so, so much for your service for me back in 1987, right? I'm so grateful for that, gentlemen. All right, my schedule is picking up a little. My travel schedule is going to be picking up here. And so I'm not going to have time to do the listener feedback today, but I do want to put one piece of listener feedback on the front end of this episode. And it's from Dan. Dan wrote in, and the subject line is good news, bad news. And he says, hey, my friend, hope all is well with you. I have some good news and bad news this year. The good news is that I have finally listened to all the episodes of Sober Speak. The bad news is also that I have heard every episode of Sober Speak. I wanted to take a moment and commend you on this wonderful work that you are doing. I have and continue to enjoy Sober Speak. It is certainly a great tool that I try to use to enhance and improve my sobriety as we all walk along this path of recovery. I have the opportunity forced on me because I have caught up with all the episodes to listen to other podcasts of recovery and have found several enjoyable ones as well. But I am spoiled with yours. Your personality and genuine care come across the airwaves, or whatever you call it nowadays, so clearly, and it creates a connection to myself, and I'm sure the others feel it as well, just like it would be sitting in a meeting with you. I drive an hour to work I drive an hour to work and an hour back home, so this is where I do most of my listening to the podcast. Well, you're going to be hearing this one, Dana, hopefully. Every single speaker on Sober Speak has been on point with experience, strength, and hope. I must mention that out of the many, one stands out to me. That's episode number 313 with Milt Loring of Cleveland. I recognize that laugh and his story, and I believe I heard him many years ago at a conference. That laugh is unforgettable. just meant for a short email, my friend. Keep up the good work. Glad to be part of the Sober Speak community, Dan S. Well, Dan S., that made my day. I really appreciate it. And I think I said that on that episode. I got to meet Milt Loring at one point. And also Jason emailed me after that was over because I wasn't sure whether he was still, I was wanting to get him on for an actual interview, but it turns out that Milt has passed on and he's gone to the big meeting in the sky. But nonetheless, well, thank you, Dan S., for writing in that in. Just absolutely made my day. And I know, I hear things that are enjoyable to me all the time, or watch things or hear about things. And for somebody to actually take the time, because I'm bad at this, right? Actually taking the time to sit down, type in John, J-O-H-N, @soberspeak.com, and then write an email. It means, it's the lifeblood for me to keep this thing going. The feedback that you all continue to give me. And I realize that not every, like I'm bad at writing emails and telling people what how wonderful I think they are and such like that. But Dan, I really do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to send in that email. Appreciate it. All right, now on to Mr. Chris F. And we are calling this one contempt prior to investigation. You'll recognize that phrase from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really, really enjoy my conversation with Chris. This is one where we got to sit down one-on-one with each other. Chris lives in Dallas, and he has been sober since 2009, as you will hear, and has a real passion and enthusiasm for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Chris started drinking at the age of 13 and was a well-seasoned alcoholic by the time he graduated from college at University of Texas in Austin. We discuss, I love this. Chris never owned a car in college, but somehow got DWIs and in all sorts of other trouble with cars. There's something about an alcoholic in cars. I mean, part of it's funny, part of it's not funny at all. I get it. But it's like alcoholics are drawn to a car, like a fly is drawn toward light. You know what I mean? Anyway, Chris discusses the common peril and common solution that binds us all, how spirituality is the great equalizer, how Chris got from point A to point B in his life. And hint, it involves divine intervention. He talks about the amends process and much, much more. And as a little reminder, I'm not going to be having listener feedback on the end of this here episode today, but I know you're going to enjoy Chris, and he can hold his own on an entire episode. He's just that good. So anyway, so I'll go ahead and do the thing that I do at the end. May God keep coming back. It works if you work it, and may God bless you and keep you until then, and I hope to see you guys next week. But here is our featured speaker. Without further ado, that's a weird word, ado. Anyway, without further ado, I present to you Mr. Chris F. with contempt prior to investigation. Enjoy, Chris. Okay, everybody. So today we are sitting here with Mr. Chris F. And we'll talk a little bit about how we got together here, Chris F., in a second. But first things first, why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, give your sobriety date where you give your sobriety date if you wish, and tell people where you live.
Yeah, thanks, John. My name is Chris F., and I've been sober since November the 9th, 2009, and I live in Dallas, Texas.
Okay, so we know each other from a mutual friend of ours that actually does not listen to the podcast. And I know that because every time I ask him, he'll say, "Hey, have you ever heard of such and such?" And I'm like, "Hey, Steve, he's been on the podcast like 4 times.
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to the podcast, you would know that." So anyway, our mutual friend is Mr. Steve G. He thinks the world of you.
That's nice.
And he suggested that I get you on the pod. So here we are. We're sitting together today. So how do you know Steve? Through meetings?
Yeah, Steve and I go to the same meeting on Saturday morning. It's a men's meeting over in Addison, actually. close to Dallas. It's the Clean Air North men's meeting. Shout out to the guys out there at 9:30 a.m. Saturday mornings. There most weeks, and Steve is too.
And so you've been sober since 2009. Do the math on that for me. That's how many years?
I just got 14 years.
14 years?
Yes, sir.
My goodness. Yeah. That is fantastic. So that kind of leads me to my first question with you. We were just talking about your kids and your little ones, and you needed to spend time with them a little bit today before you came over here.
Correct.
And you went to some events and stuff like that.
Right.
How old are the kids?
I have two daughters, Grace and Lucy. Grace will be 5 in about a month, and Lucy will be 2 in 2 weeks.
Oh, very cool.
One of those gifts of recovery.
Yeah, so that, and I've kind of, my children have never seen me drink. Right. So it sounds to me, were you married before you got?
No, I came into AA right out of college, actually. So I started drinking at 13 or 14 years old, and it escalated quickly. You know, when I was in high school, I was full go. I was drinking every weekend. I was experimenting with all kinds of drugs. I was doing it all from the very beginning. And by the time I got out of college, I had already pretty much gotten to a place where I hit bottom, and I was looking for help.
So was that at around 22 or so when you got out of college?
That was 22, yes. And I didn't immediately make it to AA. I didn't know what to do at the time. I thought my problem was drinking and using drugs, and that if I could just stop doing those things for a long enough period of time, that my life would get better. I'd get better emotionally, psychologically. I was struggling with anxiety and depression. I thought to myself, you know, alcohol is my problem here. If I can just stay sober for a long enough period of time, that stuff's going to get better. And what I experienced was that couldn't have been further from the truth. I stopped drinking for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and I felt like I was getting worse emotionally. I was struggling heavily, and that's when I eventually went and saw a doctor, and he brought me to AA, or told me he thought it'd be a good idea to go there.
Okay, I want to talk about the doctor here real quick, but before I go there, though, so there's people who have this kind of constitution, they can do it, and there's others like me who can't. It sounds like you were drinking for 4 years heavily during college, probably doing a lot of drugs as well.
Yes.
And you actually made it through in those 4 years.
I made it through, but just barely. I graduated, but it wasn't much more than a 2-0. And I was really good at doing that over the years. I was really good at doing the bare minimum. And, you know, if I could have done sobriety and recovery the way that I did a lot of the other things in my life, you better believe I would have. But it wouldn't work. I had to be willing to do some things differently to get some different results. And I could not half measure my way through sobriety. I had to be all in and take a different approach and really commit.
Gotcha. Okay, so tell me about that doctor. What kind of conversation did you have with him?
Well, this is actually, the doctor is kind of a God thing too, because at this point in my life, I mean, I had gotten really sick psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and I was essentially, I guess the term is agoraphobic, when you are scared to leave the house.
Oh, yes.
I graduated college and I moved back in with my parents and I was living at home. And I mean, my objective for the day at that point in my life was to get through the day without a panic attack. You know, like I didn't have a lot going on, and I was overwhelmed just going to the grocery store. You know, going to the grocery store, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to see anybody I know. I don't want to talk to anybody. I was scared of life. And, I didn't understand what was going on. You know, people were asking me questions at that point in my life. They were asking me, like, what's the matter? What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like, this isn't that complicated. Stop drinking, stop using drugs, go get a job, and go live your life. And I'm looking at them like, I'm trying my best here. You know what I mean? Like, you want to see me not try? Let's do that, right? Like, no. And so from that space that I was in at that point in my life, I felt very alone, you know, ostracized, like no one could understand what I was struggling with. And so I eventually had a realization, an epiphany, a moment of clarity, if you will, where I realized maybe I should get some help. Maybe I should go see a doctor. You know, I'm not doing very well here. Maybe I should go see a doctor. And I found a psychologist, and this is why it was a God thing for me. I found a psychologist that was the closest psychologist I could find. I could have walked to his office, and he was on my insurance. I showed up there, and I told him what was going on and what I was going through and all this kind of stuff, and he said, I don't think that we have a lot to talk about, but I think you should go to AA. And I was like, AA? That sounds like a lot of work. You mean, like, you don't think that there's, like, another alternative you can give me, yeah, like a plan B, like, yeah, a pill or you're something right, like that, or a guided meditation you could take me on to snap me out of it? And he was like, no, let's go to AA. I was like, oh, but because I was very, very sick and tired of being sick and tired, I was willing to do things that I didn't necessarily want to do. And that's how I ended up at Clean Air North over there in Addison.
Wow. Yeah, so you were looking for like a Prozac or a guided meditation or something, I mean, like that to snap you.
I just wanted to sit at home and eat Ben and Jerry's and watch reruns and then wake up one day, feel better, and be able to go out and tackle the world. But it just wasn't happening. I was getting worse and worse and worse on my own. And so I'm very grateful for that doctor. As a matter of fact, that guy knew what he was talking about.
Was he in the program?
He was in the program. Yeah. And he went to Clean Air North. He doesn't live here anymore, but he, you know, obviously had a key part in getting me there and was with me through my early years of recovery. So, and his name, as a matter of fact, is Bill W. So that's kind of funny too.
Oh, that's great. I've been down to Clean Air North many, many times. I like it down there. Got that coffee cut in your throat here?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and, you know, speaking of the coffee, you know, we were kind of talking a little bit out there before we came in here, and you said you've been listening to the podcast for a while and mm-hmm. such. And I told you, I just like to make this like a conversation to where we both have a cup of coffee in front of us right now.
Right.
We sit down with a cup of coffee, we have a conversation, much like we would just me and you getting to know each other at Starbucks.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I listen every week. You've had a lot of great speakers come through the seat I'm sitting in right now. You know, Gary Kay really resonated with me, David G, Jimmy D. I mean, there's some that I'd already been listening to prior to them being on, like Matthew M.
Yeah.
There are so many of them. Who's the individual up in Jersey? Chris?
Chris S, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many. Cliff, is he in Oklahoma? That one in Oklahoma?
Cliff's in Oklahoma, and his wife also, Lori G, Cliff G and Lori G.
So many great speakers that have come through here, and so I'm grateful to just participate and chip in where I can. You know, it's pretty exciting.
We're glad you're here. Steve may actually listen to this particular episode, and I think the main reason he would do it is to see if we mention his name.
I didn't see him this morning, so I'm not sure. I usually see him at the meeting.
All right, so. Okay, so you're 22. So what else do you want to tell me about from 13 to 22 in those years? I mean, just sum it up in a few bullet points if you can.
So when I first started drinking and using drugs, it had a profound impact on me. And I realized that if I did these things, that it would afford me an escape. I didn't know it at the time, but I was looking to self-medicate, right? And so I kind of took that from the beginning and just ran with it. And there were signs from the very beginning that what I was doing was a problem. But, you know, I would justify and rationalize it with like external circumstances. What I mean is that, okay, if drinking and using is such a big deal, then how come I'm still going to school every day? How come I'm able to hold down a job? How come I'm on the basketball team? You know, whatever. And someone said something in AA one time. They said, I'm going to tell you something, and if you buy into it, it'll save you a lot of grief. And what they said was that if you're justifying something, if you're rationalizing something, if you're defending something, then you're wrong. Because you never have to justify, rationalize, or defend the truth. And I was absolutely wrong. What I was doing was a big problem. And, the truth is that I just wasn't willing to accept it. I would, you know, I got in trouble doing silly stuff when I was growing up. I went to high school over here in Plano, and, you know, one of the harder things to get before you turn 21 is alcohol, right? You can get other stuff, but alcohol is pretty tough to get. It's, you know, regulated. And so one of the things that we would do is we would drive through in Texas, and in North Texas, there's all these alleys instead of driveways in the suburbs. And we would drive through those alleys where people's garage doors are, look for garage doors that were open, and garages that had refrigerators in them. And a lot of those refrigerators, we'd run in there and they'd have beer.
Yeah.
And I got caught doing that, not once, but twice. You know what I mean? The cops showed up at my house like 5 days after I turned 16. And my parents were like, what's going on? You know, but, you know, so I got in trouble a lot for stuff like that. But the truth is alcohol was working so well in the very beginning that I would get my hand slapped for something like that, or get grounded for a week or two. And then I'd go out the next week, get drunk and forget about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I was going to live my life as long as it was working the way that it did. But what happened really truthfully is that, you know, what I was doing, like I said, was self-medicating. And, over the years, I was just taking all these things that I didn't want to deal with, and I was sweeping them underneath the rug. All the fear, the anxiety, the insecurity, I was pushing that stuff down and operating underneath this like theory that if I could push it down far enough and keep it down long enough and pour enough booze on top of it, that maybe it would magically go away. And what I found out was that eventually I got so full of all of those things that I was trying to avoid, those manifestations of self, that I couldn't fit anything else in there. And the pressure of having all that stuff wrapped up in there so tightly forced it to almost erupt like a volcano. And when that happened, I couldn't drink enough to deal with it. I couldn't drink enough to push it back down. And that's when alcohol turned on me and stopped working. And I remember that very clearly. This is when I'm in UT down there in Austin going to college. I think maybe a junior at the time, and we're doing this thing called Power Hour. We're pre-partying, okay? Have you ever heard of pre-partying? It's like when you go drink before you go drink.
Right.
That's what we were doing. And we were playing this game called Power Hour. It's where you take a shot of beer every minute for an hour, okay? And it's a, you know, college thing.
You know, when I was, and I was down in Austin too, I went to school down there. I didn't do as well as you do because I was drinking too much. But we used to play something called, the Bob Newhart show. And anytime Bob Newhart would say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on it right now, he would say something, and anytime he would say that phrase, we would all drink. But I'll remember before you're over, but my apologies for interrupting. Okay.
No.
So you're playing Power Hour.
We're playing Power Hour, taking a shot of beer every minute for an hour.
I just remembered.
Yeah, go for it.
Anytime somebody would come in the room and they would say, hi, Bob, which happened all throughout the show, people would have to drink. So that was it. But anyway, go on. You're playing Power
Similar Hour. Game. Yeah. Similar game. This is like much simpler. Just wait for, you know, the clock to go over around another minute and then you drink. So we were definitely trying to get drunk. And so I had this experience that night where I had maybe 5-6 beers in me, you know, right around where I'm looking to start to feel that relief. This is why I drink. I drink so that I can take a deep breath and relax and settle in for the evening. And for some reason on that particular night, I was feeling the alcohol in my system, but my mind was still on. You know, my mind was still like running around like it was the middle of the day. And I was like, wait a second, this is not how this is supposed to work. I'm supposed to drink this stuff and it's supposed to shut that off. And for some reason on this night, that wasn't the case. And it was like almost too much for me to handle. I was like, no way, Jose, is this not going to, if this doesn't work anymore, I don't know what I'm going to do. This is the only thing I've ever had that's enabled me to really be okay and to get out of bed in the morning motivated to get stuff done. If alcohol doesn't work anymore, I don't know what life looks like. So that was another turning point for me where alcohol stopped working. And like I said, it was almost too much for me at the time to accept. So I didn't accept it. And I applied self-will to trying to find another way to recapture that elusive effect that had escaped me. And so I had about a year or two where I couldn't get drunk. I couldn't get sober. The best I could do was black out or pass out. And it was very, very painful.
Wow. So, and one other thing I wanted to ask you, did you ever attend any sort of meetings when you were down in Austin, or was the first one you attended when you got back to, I'm assuming your parents were in Dallas, by the way, is that right?
Correct, yes, they were. Okay. Yeah, so I did get a DWI. So at the, kind of like the climax of all that 2 years or whatever it was me. And I never had a car in college, which was a good thing. I just walked everywhere and took a bicycle. But one summer, you know, it's hot out there. One of my buddies was going home to up north somewhere, and he had this minivan, and he was like, "Hey, Chris, you know, can I park my minivan in your apartment parking lot?" And I was like, "No, that's probably too much." You know, he wasn't letting me drive it. I was like, "That's probably too much responsibility for me." But then, like 30 seconds later, I'm like, "Wait a second! It's 110 degrees out there. It's I'm going to this job at a pizza kitchen, riding a bicycle across town. That minivan's got air conditioning in it. You know, maybe I do want that minivan." It didn't take me 2 weeks before I got a DWI, and I actually got the DWI on campus. Okay, I was like speeding like 60 miles an hour at 2 a.m. running a stop sign on campus, and they sent me to some sort of class like AA at UT. Yeah. I don't remember. It was like a pseudo AA meeting, I think. I don't know if it was a real AA meeting, but you know, I kind of got exposed to it there. But for the most part, it was really after I saw Bill W. and he told me to go to Clean Air North. And Clean Air North, man, I'll tell you this. Like I said, when I was kind of towards the end there and I was trying to get sober, I was feeling very ostracized and isolated. And I had this like really another turning point, profound experience when I showed up at Clean Air North for the first time. And that was that, you know, I went in there and told those people what was going on with me and how I felt and what I was going through. And I had a completely different response. And that was that these people looked me straight in the eye and they said, "We know exactly how you feel and you don't have to feel like that anymore." And there, you know, that was so powerful. I went from being all alone to a part of in a split second, right? And I had hope that maybe if this program worked for them, it could work for me too.
Yeah. Okay, so that was kind of your entree into Alcoholics Anonymous in 2009. Talk to me about the first, I guess, you know, couple of years of AA and what you were experiencing there, and any sort of highlights, lowlights.
So that wasn't in 2009. So I actually, that was had been in 2006. So I came into Clean Air North, I got a sponsor, I got involved, they started having me do different things. I mean, granted, I was 22 years old. I mean, you said you've been to the group. I was so much younger than anyone else that was there. I kid around and I say that when I first got to AA, I thought the only requirement for membership was a 2.5 kids, a minivan, and a 401k. You yeah. know what I mean? Because like everyone was twice my age. I was just like this young college yeah. kid that was coming in there. Like, but it didn't matter, yeah. right? Because the things that brought us together, they kind of transcended the age gap, right? We connected through the common peril and the common solution. And that's really what drew me in. I started to get surrounded by all these old timers and these guys like Brooks B and Mike J and some of them have passed on, Joe A and all these old guys. And we would go out to eat. We'd go to the Flying Fish or we'd go to Freebirds and I'd sit down with these guys and they made me feel safe. They made me feel like I was a part of, and they made me feel like that if I just continued to suit up and show up on a consistent basis, that I could stay sober and be reasonably happy. And that meant the world to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't complicated. It's not a complicated program. It's just a matter of doing the things that they were doing that was helping them.
Yeah. Mike J, I just saw him the other day, just this week. He's a great guy.
Great guy. Yeah. Awesome guy. He's really, really good.
When did you meet your wife during this period? I guess this is an okay question. Is she in the program or is she outside of the program?
She's actually not in the program. And she's a normie, say, right?
Right.
You know, I met her about a year into my first round of sobriety. So it would have been at the end of So I first got sober when I got that DWI in like September of 2005.
Yeah.
And then I met her in like December of 2006.
Oh, so she saw you at your kind of worst.
Well, at that point in time, I had been sober over a year, so I was doing okay. But she did see me relapse and go through that. And that was a little bit scary for her, to say the least.
So she had, did she know about your past at the time? That
she
you
knew that I was sober, and she knew that I went to AA, and she knew that. But she didn't know what she was getting into as it relates to when this guy drinks, all bets are off, and you know it could be really, really bad fast. And now she does know about that.
Yeah.
It's funny when I go out to rehabs and kind of, you know, get to carry the message, I'll reference my wife like as an example of a normal drinker.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, I'll talk about how when we go out to dinner, and you know, she'll order a glass of wine, and we'll eat our dinner and all this, and then, you know, get the waiter over, comes over, and we'll pay the bill and be like, all right, we're done here. Let's go home and get some rest. And she's like, well, hold up. Let me finish my wine. And I'm like, chug it. And she's like, I'm not chugging this wine. What are you, crazy? And she proceeds to sip on it for another half an hour. And it's like painful for me to watch, but I can't relate to that. That's the way normal people to drink. Me, no way, Jose. Once I start, I can't stop. And it's a completely different ball game.
Did you ever go out to off of 2222 a lot when you were in Austin and drink out there?
So, I didn't drive, and I was drunk like 90% of the time, so I don't really know the roads that well. Is that like out by Salt Lick or something?
It's off of Far West Mopac.
Sounds familiar.
It's an area out there. They have all kinds of beaches. You know, what's the nude beach?
Hippie Hollow?
Yeah, Hippie Hollow. I think it's out that way too.
I don't think I've ever been to Hippie Hollow, but fun fact, my brother used to like man the front gate there when he got out of college.
Did he have to be clothed when he manned it?
I think he was
unclothed?
Probably clothed. Yeah, I think he wore clothes.
At the front gate, you were clothed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, there's a, what are they? It's a nude
beach?
Nude beach, I guess you out there in Austin.
Yeah.
Austin, they like to keep it weird, as they say.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, so that's so wild. You didn't have a car for 4 years, so you don't know the roads that well.
I lived on campus.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Didn't need
easy.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great, though. I mean, unless you were able to, you didn't get as much trouble, I'm sure.
Exactly. I might not have made it through if I had a car. That was a very good thing for me.
It looks like when you did drive, your luck was not real good.
I was in jail within 2 weeks.
Okay, so back to your wife. So you met your wife. How did you meet your wife?
So one of her friends was dating one of my friends, and she was going to law school at SMU at the time, and they just set us up. So that's how we met.
Gotcha. And so how long have you guys been married? Did you get married after you got sober or before you got sober?
So I first came into Cleaner North in 2006, and I got about 2 or 3 years sober. And then I relapsed. I kind of got away from the program. I stopped doing the things that were helping me. And I kind of had this like conversation with myself where I was like, you know, I was doing really bad before and I'm doing a lot better now. So maybe it could be different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it obviously wasn't any different. And she saw me relapse and experienced all that. And we, ended up breaking up after that. It was actually after I came back in, after I relapsed in 2009, she and I split up. And that was kind of a turning point for me.
And was it mainly because you had gone,
right,
your drinking habits?
Yeah, I think so. I think for the most part, it was like, okay, like, because she's thinking long term.
Right.
She's thinking marriage, kids, things like that. And after she saw what happens when I drink, she was like, I don't know if this is the best decision for me.
Blame her.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I didn't blame her one bit. And so it all made sense to me. But that was a turning point for me when we broke up, where I was like, okay, maybe I came back in trying to salvage this relationship. And at that point, it was like, well, I got to stay for myself now because I don't know that this relationship's going to be here anymore.
Right.
And so we broke up for about a year. And then eventually it came full circle and I stayed sober. I stayed in the program and we got back together about a year later after we broke up. And at that point we kind of had a fresh perspective on it and understood that, you know, what we had was something that was special and that we wanted to essentially move forward with getting married and all that kind of stuff. We didn't get married for a couple more years. So we got married in 2014.
Okay. Gotcha.
So next year will be 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And now you have Grace and Lucy.
Grace and Lucy.
So it looks like you had about 5 years into it or so. You had Lucy. Is that right? Or,
Grace. We had Grace. Correct. Yeah. She'll be five in a month.
Talk about being a dad in sobriety and being a husband in sobriety and what that means and what you've experienced.
You know, obviously, it's hard to put into words really what they mean to me. But I know one thing's for sure, and that is that I would not be in this situation, married and with these beautiful girls, if I wasn't sober. The big book talks about God is either everything or he is nothing, right? And I can honestly say today with y'all's help, with God's help, with the support of Alcoholics Anonymous, that God is everything to me today. He is the one thing that makes everything possible. He's everywhere. He's the one thing that brings everything together for me and supplies me with the power to do the things that I can't do on my own. And so I continue to strive and make that God my number one priority, right? Just like I was taught in the beginning to keep first things first, I got to keep God, sobriety, recovery a number one priority, because all the things that are worthwhile in my life today, the girls, my wife, all of it is contingent upon the maintenance and the growth of my spiritual condition. You know, my faith and my capacity to rely on that faith on a daily basis, going from a place where I was just, you know, going to God as a kind of a last resort, you know, a foxhole prayer approach to spirituality, to having God be my number one response, right? Where faith and spirituality are the main focus on my life. So being a father is kind of like the only thing I can, I went on a work trip this week, right? I went on a work trip this week and, I'm busy doing all this stuff for work, and I get home and I go into Grace's room and there she is, you know, and she gives me that look like everything else just goes away.
I understand.
You know, everything else melts away, and the most important thing to her is that love that I'm able to demonstrate to her and that I'm able to give to her. And to have that kind of purpose is so powerful. The only thing that I can compare it to is the feeling that I get from going out and trying to help other alcoholics.
So, and I want to share with you something that happened to me when I was like closer to like 10 years sober. That's when I married my wife, the lovely Mrs. M. And I had been kind of going through a prayer and a meditative state. And I remember that I got this real clear message from the God of my understanding, you know, and he said, because I was struggling with some stuff, some fear and all this. And I remember I got this message of, you know, you take care of your family, John, and I will take care of you. And we've had to make a lot of decisions throughout the years that have been, you know, like whether it was jobs I took or places we lived or things that we do, you know, for me to kind of put myself on the back burner, if you will, and take care of the family, spend more time at home and all that sort of stuff. And it has all worked out fairly well. And So I can, when you were talking about that, seeing Grace in the bed and such like that, I was getting a little teary-eyed thinking about, you know, those sorts of moments. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. You're on the right track. Okay. I could talk about your family all day long. Let's talk about prayer, meditation, and what kind of spiritual journey you've been through, right? You've been at this a few years now. You know, I know that most people go through different stages of what they think their God's going to look like, what it ends up looking like, how it morphs, and talk to me about that.
Yeah. So let me think here. Have you heard of the story of the three little fish? It's a story that I've heard passed down in AA.
Is that the one where he says about the water?
Yeah, that's the one. You know, I think it was, I don't know if it was Chuck C.
Chuck C. is where I heard it originally.
That I heard it came from Chuck C.
Yeah, but go ahead and tell it though.
Okay, so there's this story about three little fish out in the ocean. This is how I remember it. And one day this big fish swims up to the three little fish. And he says, nice day, isn't it? And the three little fish say, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And the big fish says, well, isn't the water nice? And he swims off. And the first little fish turns to the second little fish and says, well, what's water? You know? And the second little fish says, I don't know. And the second little fish turns to the third little fish and says, well, what's water? Right. And the third little fish says, I don't know. And these three little fish proceed to turn around and look around and swim around for the very thing that they live and move and have their being. So it is with God. Be still, and he will reveal himself to you. And when I first got to AA, that was just too simple for me. You know, how is something that I don't understand going to be able to keep me sober? How can something that's beyond my comprehension do for me what I can't do for myself? If I can't see it, if I can't touch it, if I can't feel it, if I can't measure it, then it doesn't exist. And the people in AA taught me that, you know, the measurements that we're talking about in here know much more than what they measure. You know, that there's a whole nother world out there, like bigger than my mind, the world of the spirit. And I'm really grateful for that because I'm pretty sure I searched every nook and cranny of my mind for a solution to this problem to no avail. And so when people struggle with the God thing, my suggestion is to not overcomplicate it, to not demand an understanding of it, but instead to just suit up and show up and listen to what the people have to say in the meetings and watch what they do. And that maybe in due time, if you do that for a long enough period of time, that you'll be able to look back in the rearview mirror and see that something's working for you. Because I know one thing for sure, there's no way that I could get from where I was at to where I'm at today on my own power. My experience has proven that to me time and time again. Yet here I am living this life. So faith is born through action as opposed to some sort of intellectual exercise. And that's the way it's worked for me for the past 14 years. As long as I'm willing to put in the work, whether that's prayer, meditation, going out and helping other people, whatever it is, if I suit up and show up and put in the work, God will take care of the rest. And my life continues to unfold in a way that just exceeds my wildest expectations. And I'm so grateful. I wish I could give it to people, but you know, it's something that we all have to do for ourselves. And, you know, but I get excited when I go out and talk to other people about it. There, you know, in the back of the big book, in the spiritual experience, it talks about there's one thing that can keep us from experiencing what AA has to offer, this spiritual solution. And that's what they call contempt prior to investigation. And what that means to me is don't knock it before you try it, you know? Come in, give it a good shot. Come in, take a deep seat and really give it a wholehearted, earnest effort. You can always go back to doing what you were doing before. You can always go back to drinking and using drugs, but maybe, just maybe you won't have to. And maybe you won't want to. Maybe you'll discover something that you didn't think was possible. That's exactly what's happened to me. Today, I'm living a life that I didn't think was possible, and it's all because of AA and God.
Well put. Is there anything that you want to share regarding amends and any sort of amends that you've made during sobriety that kind of stand out to you?
Well, I mean, what I would say about amends is that you never know what's going to come out of it, right? Like, I go into making amends, and I think that it's about me. Basically, I think I got to do this to take care of myself and make sure that I can, you know, go to sleep at night, right? And one in particular comes to mind where, this is back at UT. One day, I was in a fraternity for a little while too, and one day I was doing this pledgeship thing, and we were up at the frat house like serving dinner to the actives, as they call them, and. Yeah. And I didn't have a car. I told you that, right? I didn't have a car, but one of my friends had a car, and he used to drive me around a lot. And I got this urge to go to Taco Bell. I was just like, I'm going to go to Taco Bell. And like, we used to put our backpacks in like this area in the house. And I just went and took his car to Taco Bell. Just without asking him or anything. And I went to Taco Bell and I got my Taco Bell. And then on the way back, I got into a fender bender. You know, I ended up, and I had to go and tell him that, like, I stole your car, and I got in an accident. And so I had
this gone. This seems to be a recurring theme. I mean, you're taking your buddy's cars and getting into trouble.
I mean, I was very impulsive. You never knew what you were going to get with me. I did. It was all about me. And so, as you can tell from that story, and so I had gone back to this guy to talk to him about it after I got into sobriety, and talked to him about what I had done and how, you know, obviously I regretted that and that was wrong, and that, you know, I wanted to do what I could to try and make amends for what I had done. And he, you know, here I am going into this situation and thinking it's all about me and cleaning my side of the street. And lo and behold, what he tells me is that he's got a younger brother that's struggling with alcoholism and drug addiction. And he says, well, maybe you could go talk to my brother. Mm-hmm. And I end up going talking to his brother, and I end up getting to sponsor him and taking him through the steps. And, you know, he's been sober from what I know. I've kind of lost touch with him, but it seemed, you know, he got sober after that. His brother did, and he's got his own family now. And so you just never know what's going to happen when you go out there and try and put back where you took away from in the past. And so all of it comes full circle, yeah, in my mind. You know, spirituality is like the great equalizer. In God's world, everything comes full circle and falls back into place the way it should be if I continue to put first things first.
So, just to kind of wind it down, excuse me, I'm taking a couple notes here, as you can see. I just don't want to forget something. So, in terms of winding it down, if you were to talking to somebody and you're thinking about how you would sum up your experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think you've said some of that already, but just to kind of put a bow on it, what is your, and you're talking to people out there who may be thinking about sobriety, they may not be sober yet. What is your experience, strength, and hope around your experience, strength, experience, strength, and hope in Alcoholics Anonymous?
So, alcohol for me was more than a drink, right? Alcohol was a way of life, and it was a way of life that I was obsessed with from the very beginning, despite a lot of the problems that it was causing me. As far as I was concerned, those problems were collateral damage, and they paled in comparison to what alcohol appeared to repair within me. Alcohol was like a panacea for all my ills. Like, when life happened, I drank to deal with it. And that worked for years up until one point when it didn't. And I had a really difficult time accepting that. I became a master at justifying and rationalizing selfish behavior that I used in an attempt to try and recapture that elusive effect, that sense of ease and comfort. And, you know, I was flunking out of school. I was getting in trouble with the law. I was stealing from friends and family to try to support my habit. And, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back for me was that I was slowly starting to hate the person I'd become, right? And when that happened, it was like, I was kind of panicking, because if my alcoholic way of life is no longer acceptable to me, then, you know, obviously I've got a couple of options, really. One is to commit suicide, which I contemplated but didn't seriously try, and two is to get sober. But sober is completely foreign to me. And that's why I'm so grateful for AA, because they showed me a way when I couldn't see one. They showed me that I didn't have to drink to be okay. And then if I did more than that and started to address the underlying issues that drove me to want to drink in the first place, that I could have, you know, a lifetime of being happy, joyous, and free. I could show up for friends and families that all in ways that I always wanted to but seemed to fall short of. I could realize my full potential inside and outside of these rooms. And best of all, I could find a way to get right with me, not through a bottle, not through a pill, but in these meetings, in this book, in this spiritual way of life. And, you know, I don't know how that all works necessarily. I don't know how God does what he does and how he heals me in the way that he does. But like I said before, I know one thing for sure, and that is that I could not get from where I was at to where I'm at today on my own power. And so, you know, there's proof of some sort of divine intervention in my life right there.
Chris, this has been really fun. You know, I got to tell you, and I'll tell the people that are listening as well, when we come in here and we do a little, we were talking before, as you know, like out in the living room, and then also we do a little mic check beforehand. You know, I'll just say, hey, say, Chris, I'm an alcoholic, whatever the case may be, just to make sure that the volumes are right. But you have a completely different energy when you actually start to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
your voice got elevated. It is fantastic, and I love it. I mean, you can tell you have a real passion.
I get excited, yeah. I do. It just takes over.
Right. And your voice just kind of elevates, and I love it. I absolutely love it. And plus, you're drinking some coffee there. That probably helps
pumping
as well.
Pumping me up, yeah.
That was fun, man. That was fun.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. Okay, so I'm going to read from page 164 of the big book. It says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. How was your experience? Did you have fun?
A lot of fun. Good. I'm very pleased.
Okay, well, you're going to help a lot of people too, and that's what I'm pleased about. And I'm glad that we got to meet each other eyeball to eyeball. God bless you. Thank you again for coming by.
Thank you.